Now we'll begin side two of World Watchers. This is broadcast number 641, March 19th, 1984. Now the Meese family borrowed, Mrs. Meese borrowed this $15,000 from a person who had worked with Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan for many a long time, and bought into a company, a very interesting company, owned by Dr. Earl Bryan. Now, I was down in L.A. all this week, so I didn't get a chance to go to my old files on Ronald Reagan. But if you didn't live in California, you wouldn't know the name. If you live in California and you look up the Reagan, you will find Dr. Earl Bryan, a very controversial person who now has a corporation called Biotech Corporation. Now, at the time that they're moving and he's borrowing $40,000 or $60,000, she claims that she needs money to put the children through college. Sure, they go to, you know, whether it's Harvard, Princeton, and Yale at the same time. It's a hard time to get kids in college if you incur a debt of $16,000. Why not borrow to the college and pay them back? And you wouldn't lose money on that. Just put it right to the college and borrow it. There must be an easier way to pay for college tuition than for her to put $15,000 into biotech in New York. Dr. Earl Bryan is the head of biotech. He's a long friend of Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan. He was the director of California Health Education and Welfare when Reagan was governor. He was there until 1974. Now, HEW in California was tied to the federal HEW program. Dr. Jolly West at UCLA with the mind control programs, with NASA, with the Los Angeles Police Department. This was a very controversial time, and he was a very controversial person. And Edwin Meese, operating with the COINTEL program with Operation Chaos, was borrowing money as late as 1980 from an old person who worked with Meese and Reagan when all of those operations and mind control and experimentation were going on in California. I'll have more on Brian. I'll look up some more on him, Dr. Earl Bryan, but a very controversial person. Now, biotech is described as a business development, a company that invests in small firms entering the field of biotechnology, medical, and nuclear science companies. Talk about Brave New World and California, the first fascist state. She sold her stock in May 83, but the loan was made to Thomas. Now, he went on, the fellow that made the loan, who's a good friend of Reagan's, he went on to become head of the General Services Administration in California, and there are branches of the General Services Administration that have been investigated recently. So why biotech? If they needed the money for the college, why go into debt $16,000? And they borrowed the money to do it, just as he did with his home. They knew they had to move to Washington. They had school-aged children. Why take out a loan at the time that they need their education? And you don't know if the market goes down and the stock goes down, you get a loss on the stock. Why not take it right for the college and plunk it right with the college and give them their tuition? Thomas worked with Reagan. He was on his staff when he was governor. And in 1981, after Reagan was inaugurated, Mrs. Thomas, also a friend of Meese and Reagan's, bought into biotech. Between them, they have between $50,000 and $100,000 shares. Now, another situation came out with the Carter Papers this week, where an aide to Mr. Edwin Meese told the Senate Judiciary that they had lost a note. They couldn't find a note on the case of the Carter Papers that was available before. And the note was from somebody named Roger Stone, who was an informant for the GOP, a spy in McGovern's camp at the time of Watergate. So that Richard Nixon's spy, he was only 19 years old, he was in political intelligence for Nixon in 72. Now he's sending letters to Meese in 1983, or not 80, when the election is going on, when Reagan is debating Jimmy Carter, saying he kept it, there's a memo saying he kept his mouth shut so they can't touch him when he was spying on McGovern. So this came out this week also. Now, the witness is to be called Edwin Thomas of the General Services in California, who loaned Mrs. Meese the $16,000, will be called. Earl Bryan of biotech will be called as a witness. Mr. Ted Elkin, a prominent man in real estate in Southern California, was the man who had the money, who gave it to Thomas Barrack Jr., the $70,000 that he gave to Meese. He's going to be called as a witness. General William Berkman, Chief of the Army Reserve, is to be called as a witness. Joseph Sullivan, Jr., who figured in Meese's getting a transfer and a promotion to colonel in the reserves, is to be called. The Army Inspector General had said that the transfer and the promotion of Meese shouldn't have occurred, so the Inspector General may be there. And Jan Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-T-T, the loan officer from Great American Federal Savings and Loan in San Diego, who allowed Meese to fall back 15 months in one of the payments, will be called as a witness. Now, that's a nice, juicy bunch of witnesses. Edwin Meese had a press conference and sent a note to Senator Thurman that he was putting off the investigation for a while. I did go back, I had time to go back to my files, not a complete thing on Gordon Luce, but just mention him in 1980. He's the fellow from San Diego who got an appointment with the UN, who got this juicy loan for Edwin Meese. And I believe the story, of course, is much bigger than the figures they're throwing around, but it's going to be a big stumbling block because I'm sure they're not going to want to go into these various characters. He was the chief executive officer, chairman of the board of San Diego Federal Savings before he got the promotion by Reagan, or part-time with the United Nations. And in 1980, November, just right after the election, and 2 months before the inauguration, there was a story in Wall Street Journal and in the Chronicle how the savings and loan will have a friend in the Reagan regime, that his election will ease taxes on interest from savings accounts, that there'll be bigger benefits that'll come from savings and loan, and that Gordon Luce was a close advisor to Ronald Reagan, and he was a member of Reagan's Executive Advisory Committee, his housing task force, and that the banks would have some advantages, the savings and loans, with Reagan as the governor, and that Mr. Gordon Luce, who had helped raise money for Reagan, who now, it turns out, got the loans for Edwin Meese and got appointment in Washington, was always close to Meese as a fundraiser, and to Ronald Reagan, close to Edwin Meese. And he wanted banking laws changed. He got Meese his loan, then he went on to get an appointment and wanted to affect the banking laws in favor of the particular area of the bank that he's interested in. The San Francisco Chronicle had another story on that interest-free loan, that $15,000, determining whether a special prosecutor will be needed or not. Meese failed to disclose the loan that he had from 1981 to 82. Financial disclosure reports are required by Ethics in Government Act. It's against the law. He's going to be the Attorney General, and it's against the law not to declare if he got the loan, which he didn't do. He also failed to disclose the loan to the Senate Judiciary. He sent a letter, "I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you." Well, that's pretty sad. And this article said it's a violation of a federal law to award a federal job in return for any financial consideration or any favor of value or any promise of either, besides the fact that he didn't disclose this money. Now, just running down the Edwin Meese story to summarize some of the stuff we've had before or to keep it up to date, at the San Diego Savings and Loan, Mr. Ed Gray was there from San Diego, and then he was appointed by Ronald Reagan. This is the bank that gave Edwin Meese these favors. Gray was appointed to head the Federal Home Loan Bank Board for the federal government when Reagan came in. Gordon Luce, who I mentioned from the San Diego Bank, was named to the U.S. mission to the United Nations. Now, Meese fell on 34 payments to the bank. These two men got appointments. He hadn't made any money on 34 payments over 2 years until the Washington Post had a story, and then some money quickly was put in there. Instead of foreclosing him as the loans were going on and he wasn't paying on those, they offered him a fourth mortgage. The third person who got a boost by Reagan was Thomas Barrack, California developer who was the middleman for Mr. Elkin, I mentioned. He was the one who raised the $70,000 for the Meese homes, for Meese to get that money. And 2 weeks after that, Mr. Barrack went to Washington, D.C. to discuss a federal appointment and was named Assistant Secretary of the Interior after he helped be the middleman between Elkin and Meese to get the money. John McKean has been in the news quite a bit, who arranged the $180,000 loan, and a month later was offered the U.S. Postal Service Board of Governors. Edwin Thomas, who I talked about, arranged the Mrs. Meese loan. He became the California head of the General Services Administration. There was an Army promotion of a fellow in the reserves who was supposed to retire. After they got Edwin Meese promoted and became the colonel, he wasn't supposed to have it. The papers had lapsed, and he was not supposed to be in reserve. This fellow went on to become head of a department in the Army that he was interested in. Edwin Thomas's wife, Gretchen Thomas, was named by Ronald Reagan as an attorney examiner to preside over the official, she was official and is for the Merit System Protection Board in San Francisco. After her husband got a $16,000 loan for the Meese family, which wasn't declared, then Mrs. Thomas got an appointment by Ronald Reagan in California for the Merit Systems Protection Board. Now, Mrs. Thomas's boss in Washington, D.C., he worked at the White House, Herbert Ellingwood. Herbert E. Ellingwood. He was a longtime associate of Edwin Meese, and he worked very closely, with Meese and the Thomases and Ronald Reagan. And when the loan was given to Mrs. Meese, the $16,000, Mrs. Thomas was working for Mr. Ellingwood. So Ronald Reagan named him chairman of the U.S. Merit Systems Protection in San Francisco. Then Mrs. Thomas joined as an official out there. So that you have the wife, the boss of the wife of the man who raised the money for Mrs. Meese, getting an appointment, and then the wife who worked with this fellow getting the job with him in San Francisco. So we have here 8 jobs just having to do with Edwin Meese's house. Would you believe that one? Selling a house. How many politicians have moved to Washington, D.C. and had so much clout? We don't know about all the other stories because his troubles began in June 82, and that is the date that I said 88 banks were affected in Europe and money was tied up. That the Japanese bank, the Sumitomo, is now bailing out the Vatican Bank to pay back the 88 banks. And I believe with Licio Gelli and Michael Sindona and God's bankers working with the campaigns of Reagan and Richard Nixon, that it had more to do with other debts. I'll just bet you that if this evolves, it'll go deeper and deeper. This isn't just this, that a man who's worked for Ronald Reagan as a law enforcement person in Alameda has brought his whole team to Washington, the whole gang with him, 7 or 8 of those. I can't believe that he sold a house in San Diego and couldn't find one in Washington, D.C., and hadn't figured out how to get the kids to college. They've been probably college preparatory since kindergarten. He hadn't figured that one out. So that all these appointments and all of this promotion of jobs has to do with Edwin Meese. And in addition to the $16,000 that Mrs. Meese has, Ursula Meese, in Dr. Earl Bryan's little company that we have to do a little more investigation, the biotech, she also owns stock in the American Cystogenetics. It's a biotech subsidiary that has to do with genetics. I'm sure it has to do probably with genetic engineering. Who would know? But I'm suspicious of these people and what they have in these biology labs and in the genetics and so forth. But it's interesting, considering California, the first parafascist state, that she also has worked in the American, it's the American CYTO, C-Y-T-O, dash genetics. So Edwin Meese not only works with the COINTEL program, with the Operation Chaos, with the counterintelligence activity in the state of California, slamming down the hippies, the People's Park, the Isla Vista, and I've run it down so many times. She has stock in the American cytogenetics and the biotech, which is interesting. And also she omitted this from her financial statement. She sold that in April of 83. Anything over $1,000 they're supposed to declare, and she didn't do it. So our attorney general has his finger into biotech stocks, to energy, to atomic companies that have to do with medicine and genetic firm. Where does it end, considering Stanford Research and the use of these people that he's associated with for experiments and mind control and genetic altering. This is California, the first parafascist state. Another article, the Los Angeles Times this week, Meese charges the critics are giving personal attacks and that he'll clarify his position. He said he blames the people who are attacking them as being unfair, that they're questioning his qualifications, they're impugning my character, and they're reflecting on me and my family. Well, it's his family that took the loan. I mean, how long can he yell about it being unfair? It was his wife who didn't disclose, and the LA Times called attention to it, that they didn't disclose the $15,000 interest-free loan that his wife got, a loan with no interest to biotech, to Earl Braun, of all things in New York City, and goodness knows what that lab is. So he's trying to say that the committee is unfair, that they have false and misleading statements. It's election year. And Congressman Metzenbaum said, I'm not up for an election and I'm not endorsing anything. Now, the one sentence in the LA Times that caught my eye was this. It said the officials, when they learned about Mrs. Meese's interest-free loan, expressed anguish at Meese's failure to make known the $15,000 loan, even though he had undergone weeks of briefing and simulated questions by the Justice Department and White House attorneys. Do you remember the Carter briefings that Ronald Reagan got with George Will and Jean Kirkpatrick and the people, you know, sitting old Ronald Reagan on a bench and giving him the stolen papers of the National Security Council and briefing him? Our attorney general is getting briefing, and I'm sure, see, what happens is with the CIA having their finger with all these general people and the spies, even the old Watergate spies from the McGovern years, having their fingers in the Carter-Meese papers, the Carter-Reagan papers going to Meese and Robert Gray in that game. I'm sure they know what he's going to be asked, you see, and they have reason to know the question. So they brief him, and he's had weeks. He's sat on that stool with his dunce cap while they give him weeks of briefing and simulated questions. Simulated, I'll bet you anything those are stolen. I'll bet you they know everything that he's going to be asked. But he forgot to mention the $16,000 and the extra in the genetic concern. Let's see what they do. What are they altering genes for? What purposes? Be interesting to know what Gretchen Thomas and Ursula Thomas have in these manufacturing of these biotechnic, whatever they are, their investments for chemical and experimental laboratories, goodness knows what they are. So anyway, the appointment of the Mrs. Thomas, and after having stocks there and having an investment probably encouraging Mrs. Meese to put money into Mr. Brian, Dr. Brian's corporation, then they go on to San Francisco and get jobs with her boss. Mrs. Thomas, the LA Times says, is an attorney. She was interviewed, and she was recommended to the San Francisco Regional Director by Richard Redenius, R-E-D-E-N-I-U-S, who's the managing director of the board that she was assigned to. They acknowledge that Mr. Ellingwood, who worked for Ronald Reagan in Washington and earlier when he was governor, told Redenius that she wanted to be considered for the job. They didn't endorse her skills, and the man who made the transition, the appointment, said he was barred by privacy considerations from discussing her previous legal experience, but she was hired out in San Francisco September 5th, 1982, and has an important job in San Francisco. Well, that's enough on Edwin Meese with the appointments, the promotions. There's a good chance, very good chance going that he will not be appointed. But that doesn't mean you can't call the Senate Judiciary. If you don't have the number, call the Senate offices in Washington, D.C., and ask for any of the members, whether it's Strom Thurmond or in Hatch. I called Mr. Hatch's office and Strom Thurmond. I called the people who want him and said, what are you proposing here? Do you want another Watergate? You're going to have a crook on your hands, and it's going to get worse. And that's the truth. I mean, they should know that Edwin Meese is trouble. They all were for him, and now that all these names are coming out, it's going to slow down, and I hope that he doesn't go through with this. But the Justice Department is stacked now with the gang from Alameda. So who would be the next appointee as Attorney General? It'd be funny to put someone from the East with the California Alameda Mafia there, but that's the way it goes out here in California. They have groomed and nurtured in California, the first para-fascist state, those people that would be Ronald Reagan's aides when the Garden Plot takes over, when he has his coup or his chaos, his Operation Chaos on a grand scale. Now to go on with the last 10 minutes, update you with one or two stories of the LAPD. It's complicated for some of you who pick up in the middle of a broadcast or a broadcast for the first time. I should give a brief resume every week, a little bit of it, on the trial that's going on. To refresh your memory, there were 131 plaintiffs suing the Los Angeles Police Department for keeping files on them that were ordered destroyed in 1975 and that were being fed into computers and kept after 1976 that were never destroyed. And they were from the intelligence file, photographs, names of people, anti-war protesters, anti-atomic bomb protesters, pro-abortion, you name it. People against police repression, which is a legitimate concern with the squads down there. And these various plaintiffs settled out of court for a suit over $1 million with the Los Angeles Police Department, the law office of Ronald Reagan and William French Smith representing the LAPD. And all of the files had to do with papers when Ronald Reagan was governor, with Jerry Ducote spying for him and John Reese of Western Gold. And then in May of last year, it turned out that the intelligence files were being put into a $100,000 computer run by a combination of the Defense Department with former Chief of Staff Admiral Moore, Edward Teller, the father of the H-bomb, Roy Cohn with his mafia syndicate connections, Larry McDonald as chairman of the Birch Society with his Murder Incorporated, his tangled connections to Chile and Lebanon and the Habash family, and a lot more. The computer was paid for by Representative Larry McDonald and his group, this combination, and Mr. John Singlaub, famous warrior, now working with the Anti-Communist League, the Nazis from World War II out of Taiwan, a smorgasbord of agents of past assassinations, the Defense Department, the Mafia, and hit teams and information, then going to Germany, to the German intelligence, and to Vienna in Austria, the present time. So that when the LAPD settled the case in Los Angeles, that was not the entire end of the case, because a lot of the papers that were in J. Paul's garage that went to Western Gold were ordered to be destroyed, and plaintiffs found information in there. So now they're having hearings by the police board on what to do with the people involved in feeding the computer, two-way computer, back and forth between Los Angeles and Alexandria, Virginia. And the only reason this came up was that papers in the original lawsuit against the police department were in J. Paul's garage, but these computers can be in every major city of the United States, and they are, only you people aren't having lawsuits, so you don't know where Western Gold has their computers. Now, after the story got really dangerous in terms of linking a lot of major police officers, some of them retired that were involved in this mess. A lot of the guilty government people, of course, retire right away, so they can say they were former, they're not still with us, and that makes it all look very nice. Retired Captain John W. Thompson was with the police intelligence department, and he retired when this scandal broke. He was active head of the intelligence division when J. Paul was building his database with a computer and putting material in there. Thompson helped write the guidelines in 1975 that the material should be destroyed in 1976, yet his initials are on reports spying on a judge packed in Los Angeles in 1977, and the fact that they had these former papers. He wrote the guidelines in 76, so they were clearly breaking the law in 1983 when the files showed up in Mr. Paul's garage, including papers on Judge Pack. Thompson testified at one time that officers were not allowed to routinely copy intelligence reports from the police and keep copies outside the division, and he testified that he didn't authorize J. Paul to take them home. And yet, there's information in these reports that suggests that Mr. Gates of the police department asked Mr. Thompson to get background reports from Western Ghouls and from the John Birch Society, and that he knew it did, in fact, exist. Another man who retired, who was to be testifying again this week, he moved up to Nevada, was Captain Robert Lewis. He refused to come back to L.A. to testify. He was head of the intelligence division of the police department when the computer was set up, when J. Paul was setting a database. You see, John Reese, his wife, Louise Reese, worked with Senator Joe McCarthy. He worked actively, became this country in 1963, with the House and the Senate Intelligence Investigating Committees. He continued where Joe McCarthy left off and had died, with smears, innuendos. He sends out through his Intelligence Digest information, address, telephone number of various people who, these are all people who haven't committed a crime. As a matter of fact, part of his Intelligence Digest, I saw the name Lloyd Bridges and Jeff Bridges, 244 Loring Drive, or 224. They used to live two houses from us in L.A. They're friends of ours, and I sent them this information. I said, are you aware that your name is in John Reese's files? They never answered. I guess they don't care. They're people who don't care. Actors, musicians, writers, they have just all kinds of people that you wouldn't even think were political. You can't think of one political thing Lloyd Bridges ever did, I'm sure. But his name is there, and I have a list of a lot of other people, because they're friends of mine. I wrote to them, but they don't seem to be interested. Now, Captain Loomis was the head of the Intelligence Division. He retired, and Charles B. Russell retired. All of them retired, of course, in 1973 when the story began to break, and they were forced to quickly get out. Russell retired in July 83, 2 months after files were found in J. Paul's garage that he authorized. They were found in May, and in July he quits. He was at the time in charge of the Pacific National Bank, of airport security, of bomb squads, of the nuclear emergency in Nevada, and he's working with hearsay, innuendo, law-abiding citizens, material that was supposed to have been destroyed. Now, some of the men changed agencies, which gets even more dangerous, and I'm going this background because next week we'll go right to the LAPD story probably and continue. There's some very important new information on it, but it's so important I want to get to the background here. Lieutenant Thomas Schiller was in charge of the police intelligence, that special squad, which is the counterintelligence that can have the kamikaze teams, the terrorists, the bomb squads, the guys like that one standing in Los Angeles, in Washington, the brain-controlled fellow who claims he's part of an experiment, that kind of person. Lieutenant Thomas Schiller left the PDID when it was being exposed by J. Paul and then went on to the anti-terrorist division, which is worse. They're in charge of the Olympic Games and the so-called anti-terrorist group. Captain John Cleghorn, Cleghorn, took over from Mr. Scheidecker to be in charge of the police intelligence and J. Paul. He went on to the anti-terrorist division in the spring of 82 and is in charge with them along the Olympic security. And Lieutenant Charles Kilgo from the police department intelligence was the fellow I left off just last week who was saying, I encourage J. Paul to work with John Reese, and he's with robbery and homicide, which is the murders in Los Angeles, which is even more dangerous, and he's the one who wanted to work with John Reese, and Reese works. He was put on the board of Western Ghouls by Otto Ambrose and Robert Milligan from the J. Pater Grace operation, and that is heavily involved with the Nazis in Germany and counterintelligence. So those three men, Schiller, Cleghorn, and Kilgo, left the PDID and went to the anti-terrorist division and one to the robbery homicide. Our time is up now. It is the end of the hour. I have a lot on the LAPD, and I did a lot on me, so we'll have to stop now. And I'll be back with you next week. It's Mae Bressel, and we'll continue with a lot on the LAPD and other stories next week.